1.07. Work on the Akashic Reader progressed swiftly, with everyone working around the clock to ensure their component parts of the project were produced to Adept Zeth's exacting standards. Dahlia refined her designs for the Theta Wave Enhancer, each refinement building upon the last and allowing an exponential improvement in the machine's overall performance. Dahlia had only the dimmest sense of how remarkable such a thing was, or that they were operating on the frontiers of scientific advancement, for it was no more than the application of the things she had learned in her readings, and the things she just knew. Before meeting Coriel Zeth, Dahlia had not understood how she could have known these things. But with the revelation of the ether and her innate ability to tap into its edges, she felt a growing excitement as each piece came together. Why she should have such an ability and not others was a question that had occurred to her each night as she lay in the tiny one-bed hab she had been assigned. Adept Zeth called it a stable mutation in her cognitive architecture, the evolutionary result of generations of growth and development in her brain structure that had begun thousands of years ago. Zeth's answer seemed too rehearsed, too quickly given to be entirely true, and Dahlia had the sense that the mistress of the Magma City did not understand her gift, if gift it was, as completely as she made out. However Dahlia had come to make this connection, she sought to develop it each night, studying technical data Adept Zeth supplied. She read texts on fluid mechanics, particle physics, mechanical engineering, biotechnology, warp physics, and countless other disciplines, finding, and often filling, the gaps in each one where the research was either missing or had not been taken to its logical conclusion. None of the texts made any reference to the machine god or contained the prayers of supplication to the machine spirits, a glaring omission she found all the more startling given her many years spent under the harsh, unwavering supervision of Magos Ludd. In the Librarium Technologica, Magos Ludd had a prayer for even the most mundane of technical issues, from the changing of a fused capacitor to the awakening of a logic engine at the beginning of a shift of transcription. Dahlia found none of this in the texts supplied by Coriel Zeth, and had asked her about this once as they discussed further refinements to the Akashic Reader.
"The machine god," nodded Zeth. "I wondered when you would bring this up."
"Oh, was that wrong?" asked Dahlia.
"No, not at all," said Zeth. "It is good that you do so, for it is central to my work here."
Dahlia looked up into Zeth's mask, wishing she could see her mistress's face, for it was difficult to read her moods with only the tone of her voice to go on. Dahlia didn't know how much of Coriel Zeth was bionic, for her armor covered any trace of flesh or machine enhancements. Her body language was largely neutral and gave little away.
"Do you believe in the machine god?" asked Dahlia,
feeling like a child as the words left her mouth.
"I mean, if you don't mind me asking."
Zeth drew herself up to her full height and lifted a piece of machinery from the workbench in front of her. Dahlia saw that she held a piece of switching gear.
"You know what this is?"
"Of course. It's a switch."
"Describe it to me," ordered Zeth.
Dahlia looked at Zeth as though this was a joke, but even allowing for her mistress's neutral body language, she could tell she was deadly serious.
"It's a simple switch," said Dahlia.
"Two metal contacts that touch to make a circuit and separate to break it. There's a moving part that applies an operation force to the contacts called an actuator, in this case a toggle."
"And how does it work?"
"Well, the contacts are closed when they touch, and there's no space between them, which means electricity can flow from one to the other. When they're separated by a space, they're open, so no electricity flows."
"Exactly right. A simple switch based on simple principles of basic engineering and physics."
Dahlia nodded as Zeth continued, holding the switch between them.
"This switch is about the simplest piece of technology imaginable. Yet the dogmatic fools who perpetuate this myth of the machine god would have us believe that a portion of divine mechanical will exists within it. They tell us that only by appeasing some invisible entity whose existence cannot be proven, but must be taken on faith, will this switch work."
"But the Emperor, isn't he the machine god? The Omnisire?"
Zeth laughed.
"Aha, Dahlia. You cut right to the heart of a debate that has raged on Mars for 2 centuries or more."
Dahlia felt her skin redden, as though she had said something foolish, but Zeth appeared not to notice.
There are almost as many facets to the beliefs of the Mechanicum as there are stars in the sky, said Zeth. Some believe the Emperor to be the physical manifestation of the machine god, the Omnisire, while their detractors claim that the Emperor presented himself as their god in order to win their support. They believe that the machine god lies buried somewhere beneath the sands of Mars. Some even believe that by augmenting their bodies with technology they will eventually transcend all flesh and become one with the machine god. Dahlia hesitated before asking her next question, though she knew it was a logical step in their discourse.
And what do you believe?
Zeth regarded her from behind the blank facets of her goggles, as though debating whether to answer her, and Dahlia wondered if she'd made a terrible mistake with her question.
I believe the Emperor is a great man, a visionary man, a man of science and reason who has knowledge greater than the sum total of the Mechanicum, answered Zeth. But I believe that he is, despite all that, just a man. His mastery of technology and his refutation of superstition and religion should be a shining beacon guiding the union of the Imperium and Mechanicum towards the future, but many on Mars are willfully blind to this, determined to ignore the evidence before them. Instead, they embrace their blind faith in an ancient, non-existent god closer to their chest than ever before.
As Zeth spoke, Dahlia watched her become more and more animated, the neutrality of her body language giving way to passionate animation. The miniature servo skulls attached to her shoulder plugs stood erect, and the biometrics on her manipulator arms flashed urgently.
What is now proved was once only ever imagined, but only a fool relies on faith, said Zeth. Trust in facts and empirical evidence. Do not be swayed by passion or rhetoric without proof and substance. As long as we are free to ask what we must, free to say what we think, and free to think what we will, science can never regress. It is my great regret that we live in an age that is proud of machines that think and suspicious of people who try to. Trust what you know and that which can be proven. Do you understand?
I think so, said Dahlia. It's like experiments. Until you have proof, they're just theories. Until you prove something, it's meaningless.
Exactly so, Dahlia, said Zeth, obviously pleased. Now, enough theological debate. We have worked complete.
The prototype of the enhancer was brought down from the workspace above and intensively tested within the confines of Zeth's inner forge. With Dahlia's intuitive grasp of the machine's structure and Zeth's centuries of accumulated wisdom, the device began to take on a new and more elaborate structure as the results of those tests revealed hitherto unforeseen complications. Severine spent her days virtually chained to her graphics station, turning Dahlia and Zeth's new ideas into workable patterns for Zoosh to machine and Caxton to assemble. Melusine organized their labors with her customary zeal, and even her normally stern features were alight with the joy of creation. Dahlia had never given any thought to the notion of creation in the biological sense, until one day working with Severin and Zoosh on the raised dais, checking measurements on the schematics against those that had been constructed by Zeth's fabricators.
The housings for the dopamine dispensers are slightly off, said Dahlia, leaning over the skull assembly.
Damn, I knew it, cursed Zoosh, the squat machinist already at eye level with the assembly. Never trust a fabrication servitor. That's my motto.
I thought you said only use a carbon dioxide gas laser for cutting was your motto, said Severine with a wink at Dahlia.
I have several mottos. A person can have more than one motto, can't they?
I suppose, said Dahlia. If they were a fickle person.
Fickle, snapped Zoosh. A less fickle person than I would be hard to find.
What about Melusine? Suggested Dahlia.
Apart from her, replied Zoosh.
He's handsome, said Severine. Don't you think he's handsome?
Dahlia and Zoosh shared a look of puzzlement.
Who?
Asked Dahlia. Severine nodded towards the empath, strapped into the throne of the enhancer.
Him. Don't you think he's handsome?
I wonder what his name is.
He's a psyker. He doesn't warrant a name, said Zoosh, his lip curling in distaste.
Dahlia came around from the back of the enhancer and took a good look at the unconscious empath. In the days since they had first laid eyes on him, he had not stirred so much as a muscle, and Dahlia had begun to think of him as just another component of the machine.
I hadn't really thought about it,
she said, troubled at the thought that she had treated a human being in such a clinical way.
I suppose so.
Severin smiled. No, there's only one man occupying your thoughts, eh?
What are you talking about?
Asked Dahlia, though her eyes slid over to one of the metal workbenches at the chamber's edge, where the robed figure of Caxton was rebuilding one of the emitter arrays.
Ha! You know exactly what I'm talking about, said Severin, triumphantly.
No, I don't, said Dahlia, but couldn't help smiling as she said it.
He likes you too. I saw you holding hands when we first came here.
I don't like heights, said Dahlia.
Caxton was just...
Just?
Prompted Severin, when Dahlia didn't continue.
The lad likes you, put in Zouche. You're attractive enough, and though I'm no expert, he seems like a handsome lad, though he could use a bit of fattening up. You'd make comely children, and they would probably be clever, too. Yes, you should pair yourself with the lad.
What? Dahlia and Severin looked at Zouche's pugnacious features, and they both laughed.
No messing about with you, Zouche. Was that how they courted women in the Indonesic block?
Asked Severin. Zouche puffed out his chest. The atoll exclave of my clan didn't have time for courting.
Then how do you choose a wife? Said Severin.
Or a husband, added Dahlia.
Choose, scoffed Zouche. We don't choose. I come from Nusa Kambangan, where children are genetically mapped at birth. When they come of age, they are paired with a partner with compatible genes that offer the best odds of producing offspring that will benefit the collective.
Dahlia found the notion of such a premeditated selection process unsavory and tried to keep her feelings from her voice.
But what about attraction? Love?
What of them? Asked Zouche. Are they more important than survival? I don't think so.
But don't people fall in love where you're from?
Some do, admitted Zouche,
and Dahlia saw a shadow of some nameless emotion flicker across his normally stoic features.
Yeah, said Severin. And what if a person falls for someone they're not matched with? Then they will produce children who are of genetically inferior stock, snapped Zouche. And they will be punished, severely punished. Enough questions. We have work to do, yes?
Dahlia flinched at the vehemence in Zouche's voice and exchanged a concerned look with Severin, who simply shrugged and returned to her contemplation of the unconscious empath.
Well, I think he's handsome, she said.
At last, the final iteration of the machine began to take shape. The various errors corrected, and the refinements devised by Dahlia and Zeth worked into the design. Under Mellison's expert direction, the first working model was completed 2 days ahead of schedule, and the golden throne on the dais was replaced with the new model. Diagnostics were run on every piece of the machine, all without recourse to prayers, holy unguents, chanting, or sacred oils. Every portion of the device functioned exactly as its builders had hoped and, in some cases, exceeded their greatest expectations. 2 days after Caxton assembled and installed the last circuit board, Adept Zeth declared that they were ready for a full test and ordered the empath to be woken from his drug-induced slumbers. A thrumming bass hum filled the chamber as generators powered by the heat of the magma lagoon diverted vast quantities of energy into the mechanics of the Akashic Reader. The air within the great dome had a greasy, electric feel to it, and the emitters placed between the psychers' capsules embedded within the walls of the chamber crackled with silvery sparks. A pair of muscled servitors lifted the unconscious empath from his gurney and gently sat him upon the padded seat of the newly installed theta wave enhancer. Dahlia and Mellison watched as Zeth bent to her ministrations on the man, plugging him into the device with eager, nimble fingers. Barely visible scads of light flickered in the noosphere above the adept's head, and Dahlia wondered what manner of information was arriving in Zeth's skull and from where. She returned her attention to the empath, watching as his eyelids fluttered and his consciousness began rising to the surface of his mind, now that he was free of the drugs keeping him quiescent. In the time they had been working on the device, the empath had lost weight, and his once healthy physique now resembled the figures encapsulated in the coffers of the dome's walls. Working beneath their sightless eyes, it was easy to forget the psychers were human beings, albeit dangerous humans with powers beyond those of ordinary mortals. With the first full test of the enhanced Akashic Reader upon them,
Dahlia felt an unexpected surge of protectiveness towards their silent audience.
"Will this hurt them?" asked Dahlia,
pointing towards the thousands of men and women above.
"The experience will be draining for them, I expect," said Zeth, without looking up from her labours. "Some may not live."
The coldness with which Zeth spoke chilled Dahlia, and she felt a knot of anger settle in her belly. Her lips tightened as she looked into the serene face of the empath.
"And what about him?" she asked. "Is he going to die to make this machine work?"
Zeth looked up from her work, her expression unreadable behind her studied mask.
"Voice stress analysis leads me to believe you are concerned for this individual's well-being. Am I correct?"
"Yes," said Dahlia.
"I don't like to think that people are going to suffer for what we're doing here."
"No. It is somewhat late in the process to be thinking of such things," said Zeth.
"I know,"
said Dahlia.
"And I wish I'd thought more about it sooner, but I didn't."
"Then the matter is closed," said Zeth.
"But this will kill him, won't it?"
"Not if your design works as I believe it will," said Zeth. "The theta wave enhancer should expand the empath's capacity for learning at an exponentially greater rate than he will be receiving information."
Zeth gestured to the myriad of bulky vox thieves and data carriers arranged around the dais.
"In theory, the empath will simply be a conduit for information to pass from the ether to these recording devices."
"Good,"
said Dahlia.
"I don't like the idea of him suffering."
"Nor I," said Mellicent, in a rare show of emotion. "Your compassion is laudable, if misplaced," said Zeth, as a stream of flickering data arrived in her new sphere. "Now, finish the empath's revival process. Adept Maximal has arrived to observe and verify our results."
Zeth straightened and descended to the chamber's floor, leaving Dahlia and Mellicent alone with the empath on the dais.
"Well, you heard what she said," nodded Mellicent. "Let's get finished up here, eh?" "Aren't you concerned at all?" asked Dahlia. "Do you care that he might suffer?"
"Of course I care. But that doesn't change anything, does it? As the adept said, it is a little late to be having second thoughts. You designed this device, after all."
"I know that. But when it was just theoretical, it didn't seem so, I don't know, real."
"Well, I assure you, this is very real, Dahlia," said Mellicent. "We have built it, and we can't ignore the fact that this is potentially a very dangerous device. And not just to these poor unfortunates."
"Who else is it dangerous to?"
asked Dahlia, puzzled.
Mellicent smiled indulgently, the human half of her features softening in a way Dahlia had never seen before.
"Ah, Dahlia, you are so clever in many ways, yet so innocent in others. Think of what we will learn from the Akashic Reader.
With access to the secrets of the ether, we will be able to lift humanity to a new level of understanding of the universe."
"And that's a bad thing?"
"Of course not. But it is an inevitable fact that much of the information Zeth will glean from this device will be used to create weapons of war more powerful than anything we can imagine."
Dahlia felt her entire body go cold, as though the temperature of the chamber had dropped to that of a glacial plain.
"I see you begin to understand," continued Mellicent.
"It is the ethical question all devotees of science must face. We research in the service of the furtherance of knowledge, but we cannot ignore the uses to which our findings are put in the real world."
But nothing, Dahlia," interrupted Mellicent, taking her hand. "Adept Zeth is going ahead with this test, whether you like it or not. So we'll do all we can to make sure our empath comes through it alive and well. Yes?"
"I suppose so,"
agreed Dahlia, bending to increase the flow of stims to the empath's brain.
"But promise me that we'll only use the Akashic Reader to learn things that will benefit the Imperium."
"I can't make that promise," said Mellicent.
"No one can. But I have to believe that one day we will create a machine or force so fearful in its potentialities, so absolutely terrifying in its consequence, that even mankind, a race that was once hell-bent on its own destruction, will be so appalled that it will abandon war forever. What our minds can create, I hope our character can control."
"I hope you're right," said Dahlia.
Am I dead?"
groaned the empath. Both women jumped, hands flying to their mouths and hearts, as the empath's eyes fluttered open and he looked up from his restraints. Mellicent recovered her wits first and bent down towards the empath.
"No, you're not dead.
You've just come out of a state of drug-induced neural stasis. Stimulants are washing away the last residues of pentobarbital now, so your higher brain functions should be restored soon. Dahlia gave Melisande an exasperated look and bent down over the empath.
She means you'll be fine.
You've been asleep, but you're awake now. Do you know where you are? The man blinked in the harsh brightness of the forge, and Dahlia saw that his pupils were still massively dilated. She shielded his eyes from the light with her hand, and he smiled in gratitude.
Sorry, the light in here's a bit bright, she said.
Bright, yes, said the empath, his eyes flickering from side to side as they lost the glassy texture of the recently woken. This is the Akashic Reader, isn't it?
Yes. You know what it does?
I do, said the man, as Melisande lowered the cranial assembly over his head. Adab Zeth explained it to me when she chose me to be the conduit.
My name's Dahlia. What's yours?
Jonas. Jonas Milus, said the man with a smile, and Dahlia saw that Severine was right. He was handsome. I'd shake your hand, but...
Dahlia smiled. The humor was forced, but she appreciated the effort, though it struck her as perverse that Jonas was giving her reassurance while strapped into a device that had never been fully tested on a human being.
Are we about to begin?
Asked Jonas.
I assume you must be, what with me being awake.
Adab Zeth is about to begin the first live test of the new device, yes, said Melisande, fixing the last of the restraints in place.
Excellent, said Jonas,
and Dahlia was surprised at the relish she heard in his voice.
You're not worried?
She asked, ignoring the irritated look Melisande flashed her.
No. Should I be?
No, of course not, said Dahlia hurriedly. I mean, I don't think so. The machine's passed every test, and all our simulated results suggested it should work perfectly.
Did you have anything to do with it? Asked Jonas.
Well, yes, I kind of helped design the throne you're in.
Then I'm not worried, said Jonas.
You're not?
No, said Jonas. Because I can feel your compassion and your concern for me. I know you're worried for my life, but I can sense that you've done everything you can to make sure this machine works safely.
How do you know all that?
He's an empath, Dahlia, said Melisande. It's what they do.
Oh, of course, said Dahlia, feeling foolish.
I'm looking forward to this, really, said Jonas. To use my gift for the betterment of the Imperium. What better way is there for someone blessed with my talent to serve the Emperor? I'll know everything soon, and I'll be part of something that helps humanity achieve its destiny. I know that sounds a bit grand, but it's what we're doing here, isn't it?
Dahlia smiled, relieved beyond words that they were not pressing some unwilling victim to the service of Adept Zeth's grand dream.
Yes, Jonas, she said. That's exactly what we're doing here.
All engines form on Victorix Magna, ordered Princeps Indius Cavallario, nodding towards his steersman. Keep us level, Lacus.
Yes, my Princeps, said Lacus,
expertly walking the god machine through the treacherous straits surrounding the heavily cratered northern reaches of the Ulysses Patera.
And keep the Auspex returns frequent, Pallas. The ground here is weak.
Yes, my Princeps,
came the response from the Sensori blister atop the Warlord's crew compartment. The tone of his Sensori's voice did not escape Cavallario, and he knew he was being overcautious, needlessly telling the crew their jobs. Victorix Magna was an old machine, patched, repaired and refitted 1,000 times in her long life of battle. Her fiery heart was proud, but it was old, like his, and Cavallario wondered how many more marches they would take together. In truth, the Victorix should still be in the care of the Legio Artificers, but since the attack on Adept Maximal's reactor, Legio Tempestus could ill afford to take chances with the remaining reactors clustered on the slopes of the crater or positioned along the canyons of the Ulysses Fossae. Without those reactors, it would become increasingly difficult to keep the engines of his beloved Legio operational. Whoever had struck at Maximal had done so with great precision, destroying the reactor that provided the most power to the Tempestus fortress within Ascreus Mons. Cavallario reclined in a contoured couch, his arms and skull sheathed in cables and haptic implants that burrowed beneath his skin like silver worms. This arrangement of a physical connection was fast becoming obsolete, a means of command seen as archaic by some princeps of Mars.
Many were already embracing full-body immersion in an amniotic tank that allowed information to flow like liquid through a virtual world. But Cavallario much preferred an actual connection with the engine he commanded. He knew the gradual atrophy of his body meant that he would soon have no choice but to accept emplacement within such a tank, for he could not endure the pain and stress, both mental and physical, of too many more separations. That day was not yet here, and Cavallario pushed the thought from his mind as he concentrated on the mission at hand. Linked with the manifold, Cavallario saw the world around him as though the mighty structure of Victorix Magna were his own flesh and blood. The barren, cratered landscape of Mars stretched out all around him, the pale ashen wastelands of the Palladus to the southwest, and the tumbled rock faces of the twin craters, upon which Maximal's forge hunched like a collection of blistered towers. Ahead, the tumbled, haphazard sprawl of the Giga Sulci subhives filled the landscape, a wretched, sweltering collection of towers, habs, and shanties that housed the millions of workers who toiled in the Fabricator General's Manufactorum upon the towering, lightning-racked slopes of Olympus Mons. For days, Kelbor Hal's domain had been wreathed in seething thunderheads, the slopes and forges hammered by crackling bolts of purple lightning. Cavallario didn't know what manner of experimental work the Fabricator General had going on, but it was creating some lousy atmospherics and interfering with Vox traffic for thousands of kilometers in all directions. Every channel was alive with scrappy blurts of code that sounded like a chorus of urgent voices crowded into a single frequency. Cavallario had been forced to mute the volume on the Vox, the chattering nonsense code giving him a splitting headache. Cavallario put the Fabricator General from his mind and cast his augmented gaze far to the south, where thick clouds from the refinery fields of the Daedalia Planum smothered the landscape, smudging the horizon in permanent crepuscular gloom. The three cobalt-blue engines in Cavallario's battle group marched at a steady pace along the borders between the territory of the Fabricator General and that of Epluvium Maximal, striding like three great giants of legend. On Cavallario's left was the stately warlord Tharsis Hastatus, commanded by his comrade-in-arms, Princeps Suzak. Hastatus was a killing engine, and Suzak a man who could be depended upon to deliver a lethal strike when it was needed most. To his right, the Reaver Arcadia Fortis marched with eager steps, pulling slightly ahead of the main group. Its Princeps, Jan Mordant, was a fiery-hearted hunter, a warrior recently promoted from a Warhound Princepture, who hadn't yet shed his preference for lone wolf operations.
"Close it up, Mordant," said Cavallario. "My sensori tells me the ground here is soft, and that some of the sand has shifted over the chasms. I don't want to have to call out a bulk lifter crew to lift your engine off its ass."
"Understood," came the terse reply,
screeches and howls of interference scratching over Mordant's voice. Mordant was still getting used to the quirks of his new command, he and his engine still gauging the measure of the other, and his responses were typically brusque. Cavallario only tolerated such behavior because Mordant was one of his best warriors, with a kill tally only exceeded by his own.
"Still thinks he's a warhound driver, eh?" said Kuiper, the Magna's moderati.
"Indeed," agreed Cavallario. "The Arcadia will soon cure him of that. She's a stern mistress, that's for sure. Any word from Bazek?"
"Nothing yet, my princeps," said Kuiper, consulting the Vox log.
"Sensori, do you have a fix on Vulpus Rex?"
"I think so, my princeps," answered Pallas.
"But these damned atmospherics are making it hard to keep a fix on their return, and our old girl's vision's not what it used to be."
"That's not good enough, Pallas," cautioned Cavallario. "Find her, now."
"Yes, my princeps," answered Pallas.
Cavallario gave his sensori a few moments before asking,
"Do you have her now?"
"She's further south,"
answered Pallas with a measure of relief,
"skulking around the edge of the Giga subhives at the end of the Barium Highway."
"Good ambush site," noted Kuiper. "If anything's going to come up on us, it'll be from there."
"And they'll find Bazek waiting for them,"
added Lacus, the steersman, with relish. Cavallario nodded. Princeps Bazek commanded Vulpus Rex, the finest warhound titan of Legio Tempestus, a fleet killer of engines far larger than its hunched feral size would suggest. Pulling up the schematics of the surrounding landscape from the manifold and meshing them with the topographical view afforded him through the Titan's senses, Cavallario saw that Kuiper's assessment was correct. Only the Barium Highway was wide enough to allow an engine to pass without demolishing half the dwellings. The confused tangles of glowing outlines that depicted the edges of the subhives were, however, outdated and likely to be inaccurate, so it never paid to be complacent when the safety of an engine was concerned. So much was built or demolished that most maps of the subhives were rendered obsolete on a daily basis.
"Bring us about on a heading of 225, ordered Cavallario, feeling his muscles twitch as the mighty form of Victorix Magna swung about and began a stately march along the edge of Maximal's domain. "Magos Agaer, what's our reactor status?"
"Assessment borderline," said Agaer, the Titan's engine seer, who stood immobile in his rear-mounted compartment behind the Princeps dais. "We should not have marched, Princeps Cavallario. The reactor's spirit is troubled, and it is dangerous to walk without having recited the full litany of calming prayers to soothe its troubled heart."
"So noted, Magos," said Cavallario. "Bring us to slow march speed."
"Slow march speed," repeated Agaer.
Cavallario monitored their surroundings through the depths of the manifold, drinking in data from pressure sensors, atmospheric samplers, infrared panels, and microwave receptors. His understanding of the world around him was unparalleled, his awareness unmatched by any other entity on the plains of Mars. He tried to keep his attention focused on the ground before him, for the landscape around Maximal's forge was treacherous, but he found his attention continually drawn to the ugly, bruised skies above Olympus Mons.
"What are you up to, Kelbo Hal?" he muttered.
"My Princeps?" asked Kuiper.
"Hm? Oh, nothing. I was just wondering out loud," replied Cavallario.
Kuiper had caught his interest in Olympus Mons, their communal link to the manifold allowing no secrets to exist between them.
"It's the Grand Mountain, isn't it?"
asked Kuiper, using the Titan driver's old name for Olympus Mons. The moderati of Victorix Magna twisted in the reclined couch at the warlord's chin mount to face Cavallario.
"She frets about something."
"The Grand Mountain," agreed Cavallario. "She speaks with the voice of Mars, and something troubles her."
"My Princeps," called Sensori Pallas. "Vox contact from Ascreus Mons. Princeps Sharak urgently requests to speak with you."
"On the manifold," ordered Cavallario.
A ghostly hash of green light swam into focus before the reclining Princeps, a holographic image of Princeps Sharak standing in the chamber of the first. The image jittered like a jammed signal, the words fading in and out as though the code was somehow corrupt.
"What is it, Sharak?" demanded Cavallario. "We are on mission."
"I know, Stormlord, but you must return to Ascreus Mons immediately."
"Return? Why?"
Sharak's answer was blotted out by a squealing blurt of code, like an animalistic bellow of rage, his image distorting as if in the grip of a rippling heat haze.
"Motis, they march!"
"What? Repeat last," snapped Cavallario.
Sharak's image suddenly sharpened, and Cavallario heard the next words as clearly as if his fellow Princeps had been standing before him.
"Legio Mortis," repeated Sharak. "Their engines walk, and they are heading towards Ascreus Mons."